Good morning. Today is March 31st, 2015. I'm Millie McNabb, the Christian Relationship Tool Shop Expert, and I'm your host today on the Parent Success Club webinar. And today's topic is how to get children to cooperate. And that's, I think, one of the things that parents may struggle with the most, as we really want our children to do things the first time we ask them, every time we ask them. So that's what we're going to be looking at today. I'd like to welcome you all here, and we're going to start off by talking a little bit about getting that cooperation. One of the challenges is that we really want to focus on the training of the whole child. And sometimes if we just force obedience, the children really aren't cooperating with us, then it's not a loving kind of obedience. There's a story about a little boy who was asked by his mother to sit down, and eventually he did sit down, but he defiantly told his mother, "I may be sitting on the outside, but I'm still standing up on the inside." And so we want our children to be sitting down on the inside as well. So we're going to be talking about how we can do that in a loving way. First of all, let's talk a little bit about cooperation and obedience. One of the key things is that if we're forcing obedience, we may get the child who's sitting down on the outside but standing up on the inside. Rather, we want to have that loving obedience, which we're going to talk about as cooperation. And the end result is that we're working more together as a team. My mother-in-law was fond of saying that the children that work together with their parents are the ones that learn the values. Sometimes it's a little bit hard for us to be working with our children. Our culture has us doing things where the parents are off in one direction, the children are gone in another direction. But when we're together, to think about working as a team, what can we put together that's a win-win solution for everyone in the family? One of the other things is to emphasize the value of what it is that we're doing. If you think about, as I think about, I'll say, growing up, I grew up on a farm. And it was very obvious to me that the value of the work I did actually had a financial impact on the family, because I was part of generating the income as I was doing farm work. There were things like gathering the eggs. There were things that perhaps would transfer a little more into our culture, like feeding the animals. In my case, it was cows. But there was also the dog to be fed. So if there's pets in the family, that can become a more obvious picture of how a child's work has meaning. There's other things like household chores, for example, that help generate that feeling and that knowledge that the work that they're doing is meaningful. So we're focusing on the value of what we're asking the child to do. And we're going to talk a little more about this in a little bit, but we're offering choices to the child within reasonable limits. One of the other keys is that children need to be self-motivated by the internal payoffs that they receive. So remember the little boy who was standing up on the inside? What would the reward be for him to sit down on the inside? So we're looking at all of those things, and it's a shift, perhaps not that big of a shift, in some of the things that we regularly do. So we're going to be taking a look at that. First of all, some of the things that we use to get our children to obey, if we evaluate those, are really more external motivators. So we're doing things for the little boy who's sitting down on the outside, but we're not really addressing the little boy standing up on the inside. Incentives, bribes, rewards, stickers, and praise, they seem to work immediately. For instance, you can offer an ice cream cone to a child who's about to throw a tantrum because they don't want to go somewhere. And you say, well, if we go, you can have an ice cream. And immediately they stop crying and they go. So it has an immediate result. But the long-term research shows that it's not only ineffective, but it can be very counterproductive. First of all, they can become very addictive. Have you ever noticed, or maybe even had a child ask, what do I get if I do that? So they're starting to look at it as a negotiating point. They're starting to look at, okay, maybe I'll decide not to do it unless the reward is great enough. So the reward perhaps even has to get bigger and better in order to motivate them. They may decide that whatever you're offering isn't all that great. And so we want to shift away from that reward mentality and look at what's the internal motivator. I was talking with a person who's a manager in a business, and they were talking about even a salary, for example, may not be that big of a motivator for a lot of people. Of course, you know, you expect to get paid for the work that you do. But once that need is met, once all of the basic needs are met, there has to be something else that's rewarding about the work. The same is true in terms of the things that motivate our children. The person has to want whatever the bribe is in terms of bribing. And so we want to shift that to say, what kind of internal motivator will the child respond to? So we're going to be looking next at some of those things. If we talk about a bribe, let's look at what defines a bribe versus what is not a bribe. If the parent presents the idea, and we do it in the way to manipulate the child, like the ice cream illustration I used a moment ago, that's the kind of thing that, you know, it has an if in it. If you do this, then you'll get the ice cream. And so we're manipulating the child to do the thing that we want them to do. And the emphasis is on that reward. It's about the ice cream. So if you hear yourself saying, if you do this, then I'll do that, that's a red flag to you to say, oh, I'm offering a bribe. How can I change that? So instead of it being an external motivator, how can I be talking to the little boy that's standing up inside and switch that from being a bribe to cooperation? Here's some differences. If the child presents the idea of the reward and the parent explains what must happen first to get it, then it's not a bribe. For example, let's say that a child asks for a cookie and you say, if you finish your dinner, I'll give you this cookie. Did you hear me say if, then? So we know that that's a bribe if it's worded that way. However, if we turn it around just slightly and use the words, when we have finished our healthy food, then we can have a cookie. When you have finished your meat and potatoes, then you may have a cookie, and you can adjust that accordingly. So we're emphasizing not the cookie, we're emphasizing the healthy food. Now, there's other things that you can do, of course, in addition to that, which is perhaps at a different time, you know, talk about what healthy food is and talk about whatever the other values are that you're wanting to promote. A lot of times what happens is in the emotional moment, it's hard to have teaching moments. And so if outside of that, you can talk about the benefits, the values of doing things, then when it comes up in the conversation, you can refer back to that. Another thing that a lot of times we see is sticker charts. And you see these all over the place. We use them for attendance. We use them for, have you done these tasks? And usually what happens is that the parent or the person in authority sets up that system, and then the child is just putting the stickers on there as rewards. Now, how many of you have ever made a to-do list? Most of you, okay. And as we do a to-do list, it's a reminder for us. Typically, someone else doesn't make up our to-do list. It's something that we write ourselves. And we may have it organized in different ways, and it helps us keep on track. So is that a valuable skill to teach our children? Yes, it is, very much. And so what we're looking at is a difference between the chart being imposed on the child and the parent deciding if the child did good or if the task is really completed, and the emphasis as an incentive kind of chart tends to be on the reward. Like if you have 10 stickers, we'll go get ice cream or whatever it is. So the emphasis is on the prize rather than the task. And if it's an incentive kind of sticker chart, that reward is visible to the child, it's tangible, and it's given by the parent. Now let's look at the other side, which is more of a to-do kind of list. It's an organizational reminder list. So the child helps set up the system and create the chart. Let's think about children and what they need to do before they go to bed, for example. You might have them brush their teeth. You might have them comb their hair. They probably need to get their pajamas on, drink water, use the toilet. So it could be a fairly simple list. And so you could ask the child, what would remind you to do these things? An example might be to have them draw pictures of them doing it. Or with the cell phones, you can just take an easy picture, put a little picture on a card that reminds them to do that. And then every night, they go through that list of five cards, and when they have those cards done, then they have completed the things. They know it themselves. They did not have to come to you to know if it was done. And they learn to do the skills by themselves. The reward is different than the sticker chart reward, which is tangible and given by the parent. Their reward is a celebration that they got it done. And so they know that they've accomplished it, and it's something that they can measure themselves. What happens if we're not addressing the little boy that's standing up on the inside as well as the one that's sitting down on the outside? We have that power struggle. And the little boy that's sitting in the corner probably has his arms crossed. He's probably got his lip part way out. He's probably glaring at us. And we're arguing about the limits. And we may have pulled rank on him as the parent and said, "You're doing this because I said so." So overall, it's a win-lose outcome. Remember back earlier, we said what we're looking for is a win-win. We're looking for a situation where the parents' definitions or limits are met, but the child also has some choices. So that's the second picture in our PowerPoint represents this. The circle is our limit. So we set a limit. We set a boundary that is acceptable to us, and that's our limit. Within that limit, then we offer choices to the child. If you think about, let's say bath time, for example, and you say to your child that you want them to it's time to take their bath, and they're headed in there to take their bath, but they say, well, I don't want to take a bath today. What kind of choices can you offer? Well, you can offer bubble bath or not bubble bath. You can offer toys or not toys. And so you're giving them choices. What if they say, well, I want to take a shower? Now they've negotiated what you said your bottom line was. And so it may cause you to take a second look and say, well, maybe that wasn't really my bottom line. My bottom line is you need to be clean. You can take either a bath or a shower. So then you've redefined what that limit is. But both options are fine with you, either a bath or a shower. If you think about bedtime, if you have a child that is maybe a little bit older, a preteen, you can say, you choose what time you go to bed. 9 o'clock's the limit. And so you're giving them your bottom line, but offering them the choice. So they can choose, you know, how they want to use that time up till 9 or even go to bed earlier. An interesting thing that happens when we're looking at getting cooperation is the words that we use oftentimes actually cause our children to get, I'll say, it kind of builds in rebellion with them. So if we are always saying, don't do that, stop doing that, quit doing that, no, what it actually triggers in the child's mind is, first of all, they have to go through an extra process about the negative command. The mind doesn't immediately process the negative command. So let's say we say, don't jump on the couch. If they don't process the don't, what they hear is jump on the couch. So immediately that reinforces what they're doing. And it's hard to visualize the negative aspect of it. So they visualize in their mind jumping on the couch and it continues. So what we want to do is don't say don't, but describe rather what we do want the child to do. What would its alternatives be? Let's say if it's regarding the couch, it could be sit on your bottom on the couch. So that would be a positive command. It would be a positive way of saying what you did want. Let's say that jumping was actually okay, but you wanted the child to jump somewhere else. You could say, jump on the floor, jump on the mini tramp that we have over here. And so we're shifting our words so that the child knows exactly what to do, rather than being confused and seeing the negative behavior reinforced. I heard a woman one time tell about using that technique with a child who was always putting their feet up on the table. And she said it was like miraculous, because what she had always said before was, don't put your feet on the table. She turned that around and said, put your feet on the floor. The child immediately put his feet on the floor because he had a positive image of what that looked like, and he could do that easily. So that's one of the good cooperation tools that you can use. If we say the word no, again, that's a negative. And what happens if we use the word no all the time? Pretty soon, it's only a signal for the child to figure out how to get around whatever it is we're saying. So what we want to do is give a conditional yes. We're still meaning no, but we're using positive words. Let's go back to the cookie example. If the child says, I want a cookie. May I have a cookie? And if you respond, when you have finished your healthy food, you may have a cookie. You're not saying no to the cookie. You're putting the condition on it for having the cookie, the conditional yes. You might offer an acceptable alternative. A child may legitimately be wanting to eat before dinner time, and you can say, we're going to be eating in 15 minutes. You may have a drink of water now. So you're offering something that's an acceptable alternative. A lot of times we can also state a reason. Earlier we talked about the benefit of discussing healthy eating in a situation that's outside of the immediate cookie request. And so you can refer back to that. So remember when we talked about the benefits of eating carrots and how that increases our eyesight, those kinds of things. You might include a thing about sugar, you know, that sugar just by itself may tend to make us have out of control behaviors. So you can put that into the reasons or information that you're giving. We also want to recognize feelings. Again, this is addressing the little boy that's standing up on the inside, not just the one that's sitting down on the outside. So a simple sentence, I understand how you're feeling. I understand you may want that cookie. However, we need to eat our healthy food first. Now, what does that do for the word no? It gives it its legitimate place in our parenting arsenal. There are times when you absolutely need your child to obey. For example, running out into the street. When you say no, you need them to stop. So if you only use no for those dangerous issues or the emergencies, then it carries the weight of the no, and the child is more apt to obey that no when they hear it, because it's not just every word that they hear. They're not, they're not overwhelmed with no's. They know that when you say no, it's very specific and for a dangerous situation. As a parent, sometimes it seems like life comes at you pretty fast, and the children always seem to figure out ways to get ahead of you. And so as you're thinking about cooperation, one of the things you want to do is plan ahead. Get agreements with the children about what's going to happen. For example, if you're going shopping, what kind of behavior is acceptable in the store? What do you expect the children to do? If you're going shopping for a specific list of things, have the children help with the list, show the children the list and say, we are only getting these things at the store. And so then when you get to the store, maybe they ask for something that's not on the list. You can refer back to the list and then say, is that something that's on the list? And then the child knows yes or no. Another key thing is to follow the rules for setting rules. This may sound like kind of a funny rule, but what you want is general, simple, positive terms that state your bottom line. Going back to the bathtub example, the bottom line really was that you want your child to get clean before they get into bed. So then everything like whether it's a bath or whether it's a shower is negotiable. So as you think about the things that you're asking the child to do, think about what your real bottom lines are. A phrase I like to use is it principle or preference? Is it something that it is just something the child could choose because you want your child to learn how to make those choices? Or is it something that would violate your household rules or your values? Humor is always good to use. I remember one time I had one of my children, I could tell, was having a bad attitude. The little eyes were squinting and the lip was coming out. And I just said, "Do I see snake eyes?" And so then the little corners of the mouth turned up, you know, and it dissolved in humor. So anytime that you can use humor in a situation to help diffuse it, that leads to cooperation. Making it child friendly is another long-term thing that you can plan on. As your children get older, they have more skills and they have the ability to learn more things. And so if you can be sensitive to what's appropriate for that age, what's appropriate for that development stage of your child, then it makes cooperation more feasible. For example, in terms of doing household chores, a child can make their own bed probably when they're two, but it won't be made to the same level as what you would make your bed. But that's okay. You can make it child friendly and say, you know, we just need to straighten out the bed, the blanket. And so they're able to cooperate and do that kind of thing. And they'll get more skilled as they go along. You can have them help make your bed and you can show them how you fold the corners or how you fluff up the pillow, and they'll start experimenting with those. So hopefully that will give you some ideas today about getting cooperation with your child, making it a win-win situation for you and the child, imparting the values of what you want your child to do, and offering those choices within reasonable limits, and getting your child motivated to cooperate because of celebrating what it is that they're doing. So thank you very much for your time, and we'll stop the recording at this point and see if there's any questions.